Thank you, everyone, for having me today. This is my first time at the big stage in Homebrew, Fosdam. I've been here many years. I love this conference. It's the best open source conference in the world, but first time here. So I thought, given this topic is potentially contentious, I would get a friend of mine, hopefully make me feel a little bit better. So I sent him the screenshot of when this got accepted, and I said, oh, well, fuck. So he congratulated me, which was very kind. He thought nice things about the title, and then unfortunately let me down. So hopefully I am not, in fact, fucked. But if I am, hopefully it is entertaining for all of you to watch me, as we say in the UK, die on your arse. Anyway, so some important framing, right? We're going to talk about some stuff today which is pretty fresh. Like, literally, some people who have been involved in the story are possibly in the room, and I've seen people at Fosdem, right? So who already has an awareness of what happened with RubyGems, even a vague one, right? And who has, like, strong opinions about maybe who was in the wrong and who was in the right? Trick question. But yeah, okay, so a few of us. So what I ask us to bear in mind, right, this is not a trial, right? It doesn't really help us to go and point fingers, particularly at individuals, actually, because this is mainly a story about groups of people and communities and open source foundations and open source maintainers and companies and all of that interesting stuff, right? And I actually think this stuff gets, particularly when I'm standing on a stage and people won't be in the room, it's a bit mean if we start pointing fingers at individuals, so I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to try and avoid naming anyone except myself, because I'm allowed to be self-deprecating because I'm British. So the next thing, again, I want us to just encourage anyone who right now is like, this group or this person completely fucked this up, and this group or this person did everything right, like, that's a bit of a red flag, right? You know, many of us in the room, I'm sure, are engineers, right? And we work with software, and complex systems fail in complex ways, right? So if you feel absolutely certain about something, that means either you're probably missing something, or maybe you have a bias. That's okay. No shame, no shade, whatever, right? But just let's try and come into this with an open mind, right? Again, another important framing, I think, for all this is incentives of everything, right? Like, very rarely in the world do we actually have, particularly in things like open source and in workplaces and not Netflix shows or whatever, like people who are just unbelievably evil and cackle away as they deliberately do the thing to maximally fuck over as many people as possible, right? Like, people are responding to the incentives that are put in front of them, right? People don't go into things generally with bad intentions, and generally the people who we look at in these situations who we think maybe have bad intentions just have a really bad incentive structure set in front of them, right? So I'm asking you to look at things through that lens. And we're going to try, there's been a lot of, I guess, the word drama has come up again and again when people have been talking about this, right? Sometimes, like, favorably, sometimes used to critique one side or another or whatever. But I feel like we thankfully have moved past the drama stage, right? And we can be in the learning stage. So let's do that. This talk is about free and open source software, and specifically infrastructure projects, of which I'll talk a little bit later on why this is a particularly important topic for me specifically. But these projects underpin an enormous amount of the internet, right? Like, for most, even kind of commercial software developers who are not here, who care nothing about open source, who probably don't even really understand open source, the amount of open source software that has to work and go right and be lined up and perfectly orient itself for that person to do their day job, and increasingly their day job far removed from technology, is pretty breathtaking when you think about it, right? It's arguably, open source software is one of the best achievements we've made as mankind. And I love conferences like this because I think it really highlights the kind of beauty of what we're doing here, right? We're creating this worldwide system of software, which is incredibly powerful and many people rely on. And it empowers so many other fields, right? But because it's invisible when it's working and because people don't think about it, often it just fades into the background. And that success that comes from making things invisible and transparent and just smoothly flowing makes it even more dramatical, dramatical, that's not a word, even more dramatic when things fail. When things fail, they fail loudly, they fail globally, and the blast radius on important projects is never small. So RubyGems is one of those systems, and that's what this story today is going to be about. We're not talking about heroes, we're not talking about villains, we're just talking about systems under stress and what we can learn. So who am I? Why am I talking about this? And what can you maybe learn from me? Firstly, I think that's legitimate to ask, particularly in something like this story, because I think a lot of the people who maybe have strong opinions, like when you understand a bit about their background, it's maybe clear why they have the view they have. So I'm the project leader of Homebrew, a Mac package manager. It runs on Linux and stuff as well. So I've worked on that since 2009, so that'll be 17 years this year, which is slightly terrifying. I think what that does is it gives me a little bit of context about what it's like to run a package manager, what it's like to work on these open source projects for long periods of time. But, as we'll see later, I'm not super involved with this story beyond that, right? I was a principal engineer at GitHub for a while. That taught me a fair bit about open source. It taught me a fair bit about Ruby, because that's what GitHub is primarily built in, and scale, security, liabilities, etc. I think most importantly, actually, for the story, I'm a Rubyist. I first wrote some Ruby in 2005. I've probably written Ruby more than any other language since about 2009, and I deeply love it. I like the ecosystem. I like many of the people. I have friends that I've met because of Ruby. I have jobs that I've got because of my work on Ruby. And I have depended on it for most of my career. Finally, and somewhat least importantly, like, I have a day job, right? Open source is not my life. I'm a CTPO, a small training management software company in Scotland. But as a result of that, I have had to do an awful lot of like work around growing as a leader and trying to understand how systems and cultures and incentives are set up and what happens, right? I'm not a RubyGems maintainer. I never have been. I have, similarly with Bundler, I have no affiliation with Ruby Central. I've never been involved with them. I've never given them any money. I've never done any work with them or anything like that. In this situation, though, I was asked to mediate. So some people, as we'll talk about later on, like the way Homebrew does governance was kind of cited relatively early on in this situation. And as someone who was kind of very involved with both Homebrew and our governance process, I was asked to kind of come in and see, like, well, how can this apply to RubyGems or not? But unfortunately, my mediation did not manage to stop happening what's happened, right? It's interesting because pretty much this whole story takes place between September and October 2025. We kind of have a bit of stability now. I think some of the kind of strongest emotions were kind of past that stage, which probably helps us to look back a little bit. So we're talking about weeks for most of these events rather than years, although the context set beforehand and the stuff we'll learn afterwards will go back and forward into years. I help gem.coop. You don't need to know what that is if you don't already. But I help them kind of set up their governance process, and I learned some stuff along the way. So, okay, who knows what RubyGems is? Put your hand up. Okay, most people, so I'll keep this brief. Ruby's package manager is called RubyGems. It's technically, you could use another package manager, but that's the main default that the vast majority of people use. It was actually founded in 2004, after Ruby had been around for a fair wee while. Like nowadays, often the software kind of comes with version locking and package management along with the language right out the door, but that was not the case with RubyGems and Ruby. There's millions of applications that rely on RubyGems, and as a result, we're not talking about some niche tool used by a few people. We're talking about kind of critical infrastructure on the internet, which brings up things like software supply chains and all these other kind of big grown-up sounding words. It's not a side project as well, right? Many open source projects are essentially run by one person in their evenings and weekends. They never get any money for it. They never spend any money on it, and it's just like a fun little hobby. Like RubyGems is not in that category. RubyGems is much more critical. So, money. Money is messy, particularly when you involve it with open source. Who feels a little bit uncomfortable talking about money sometimes? Yeah, quite a lot of people. And like open source money is even more potentially uncomfortable. Because, well, some things cost money. Servers cost money, storage costs money, bandwidth costs money. On call, if you want to pay someone, well, sorry, if you want someone to be woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning on a regular basis when stuff breaks, then generally you need to provide a bit more incentive to that than just peer pressure and community goodwill. Incidents cost money. If you've got years of work, you can have it undone in a few hours when you have some critical incident. And it's why organizations behave differently under stress, because depending on where the money is, that tends to focus attention even more closely when incidents are going on. But not everything costs money. Let's compare with the open source project I've worked on for a while with Homebrew, right? So this is not to say Homebrew is better or worse. It's just a comparison, because I think we're two projects, both written in Ruby, but we have a different approach to these things. So Homebrew's hosting, when you download Homebrew's binary packages, we do not pay any money for that, because we were originally hosted by SourceForge, then Bintray, and then nowadays it's GitHub. So the trade-off for that is that Homebrew is not as independent as something like RubyGems is, right? Like RubyGems is not reliant on any single vendor. Like, they host their servers on AWS, but they could move relatively, with big finger quotes, easily to another provider, and probably certainly a lot easier than Homebrew could. So in some ways, we're not even independent. We're somewhat dependent on retaining in the good graces of GitHub, right? I used to work there. I still know a lot of people there. So I'm not as worried about that as I might be something else. But again, that may or may not be a decision that makes sense for your project or for RubyGems. So let's quickly scan through the timeline of what happened with these events, right? So Ruby Central, the organization that's kind of often cited with this kind of discussion, was founded originally in 2001 by a couple of people in the Ruby community who wanted to provide a permanent nonprofit for running Ruby community events and handling sponsorship and logistics. A few of those same people were involved with releasing RubyGems in March 2004. And then we have to go forward about 11 years before we kind of reach the next group that's kind of relevant in this story, which is Ruby Together. So they were actually announced by Ruby Central in 2015, and they described their purpose as funding on-call rotations, maintenance work, and improvements to shared Ruby infrastructure, which included bundlers, RubyGems, and RubyGems.org, which had, in their words, historically been done by volunteers. In 2022, these organizations merged and became a single nonprofit, described the motivation as reducing duplicated nonprofit overhead and unifying community events under one roof. So this brings us to basically the more contentious events, right? Hands up if you were following this live on social media when it was going on in 2025. Right, yeah, a few people in here. So September 2025, everything kind of goes down within a few weeks, right? And again, I think there's some interesting context when we talk about the setup for this taking, you know, almost 15 years, and then within a few weeks, things radically change. So one of the first things I think that happened was control of the main GitHub organization, which was used by RubyGems related projects, was changed in a way that restricted or removed access for some of the people who were maintaining RubyGems. And this came out of some folks who were involved with Ruby Central. That also involved renaming the GitHub organization from RubyGems to Ruby Central. And essentially, there was, as far as various people involved are concerned, some people say this was a very long time coming and this should have been expected, and other folks felt completely blindsided by what happened. There wasn't certainly any public notice of this. People had some sort of behind the scenes warnings that something might be happening, but certainly a bunch of people were, as I said, essentially blindsided by what happens. And the problem with this is when you make decisions quickly and when you deliver them somewhat abruptly, that always tends to feel hostile, right? It can feel malicious, it can feel difficult, it can feel targeted, even if it wasn't necessarily intended that way. And particularly in open source, when we assume so much stuff is going to be done in the public, when there's no public communication at all, then it can make this very hard. There was also essentially no governance process. So I mentioned before Homebrew's governance process, we'll talk a little bit about that later. But essentially at the time when this was all going on, there wasn't a documented process about how people get added and removed, who controls what, which nonprofit is responsible for what taking money means as a contractor or an employee or whatever with this organization. And the problem is, when you don't have a written governance structure, then whoever holds power ends up filling the gap and getting to make the decisions. So after the initial kind of shock, we had an attempt at recovery, right? It looked like things were going okay to begin with. So we got to mid-September. There was multiple possible futures. It looked like maybe we could get everything back. Everyone could get back on the same page. There might be some hurt feelings, but we'd be okay. There was a governance PR proposed on September the 14th. You can go and see the URL. I'll show it on the screen in a few slides, where you can see the kind of conversation that was going back and forth. This is how I kind of ended up getting pulled in as well, because it was based off Homebrew's governance, and then I kind of offered to give some input there, and then got pulled into mediation as well. And then shortly afterwards, the access was restored for most of these people, right? So if you go to the PR, you can kind of see how this went on and like the sort of TikTok of what was going on in the event, right? So then by September the 18th, we get to a point where I've offered to kind of step in and mediate between both sides. There's a lot of private conversations going on, a lot of private context going on. And in public, it looks good. It looks like we're both sides are discussing governance. And then we get to the point that access gets removed again for a bunch of people, right? And this is when things get a little bit messier because some folks who had their access removed then claimed that it was a mistake that their access had been removed. And then others took offense and essentially, things get very messy very quickly, right? And then trust just gets destroyed and never really rebuilt. This is when we started to get security concerns invoked as a justification as well. There was mention of supply-side security, which in recent history, there have been NPM supply-side security attacks. So Ruby Gems having a relatively similar trust model, like that was concerning to people being involved. It also concentrated power very quickly and made clear who had power to do what and who was citing these concerns and using them to make what decisions. So by the time we get to late September, we have another inflection point where it becomes public on the 28th of September that root-level infrastructure access still existed outside the new control structure. So the people who were maintainers and had either been removed from the project or had quit the project in protest at the changes, some of them still had AWS access and AWS root access even more severely, right? So again, there's back and forth about exactly who had what access and when, why, and what this meant. But essentially, regardless, this is a bad situation, right? You have a situation where the theoretical control of the project and the actual control of the project are diverging pretty far, right? And then essentially, there was a lot of back and forth, but eventually we reached the end state where almost a month later, on October the 17th, Ruby Gems and Buddle moved to the Ruby core team. So essentially, Ruby Central, who had taken ownership of these projects, then gave ownership elsewhere. And then the people who had been the existing maintainers of Ruby Gems declared that they were happy with that and they were going to allow things to move on. So you can see, you can read the root access event. This has got kind of Ruby Central's take of like what went down with the AWS access and stuff like that. This was posted on the 9th of October. And then while this is all going on, it gets to the point where there's enough, I guess, drama that like various parts of the tech press have started reporting on it. And people are getting quotes, blog posts, social media, press coverage essentially take over. We're not having really any discussions on PRs anymore. This is all happening out in the open. And then the narrative stops being controlled by the people who are just involved. And things become a little bit reactive. People start raising privately, a lot of people in the Ruby community, people's confidence drops, like, what does this mean for Ruby Gems? Is Ruby Gems still going to be running anymore? And worst of all, lawsuits begin. Like, we have, again, publicly on the record, both sides have talked about how they've engaged in legal action with the other. I have no insider knowledge as to what the status is of said lawsuits, but I think it's relatively predictable that once that happens, people are no longer interested or able really to make good and be friends with people they are in lawsuits with at that point. So what were the consequences of what happened here? Well, talk failed pretty quickly, right? So people tried to voice what was going on and how they were feeling and how they could improve things. But then when people get kicked out of the project, then all of that just becomes public discussion instead of private discussion. So a bunch of maintainers exited the project. Some people were removed against their will, and then some people were removed in protest. So you get to the point where the majority of people who were working on Ruby Gems in the space of 2 months essentially have left and gone and done their own thing. So doing their own thing. What does that mean? Well, there was this thing called Gem Co-op, which some of the maintainers went off and decided to build. So they essentially built their own alternative to RubyGems, both centralized service, and they have forks of various other projects and stuff as well. So this was not an overnight replacement, but it was spun up relatively quickly, and it built essentially a separate kind of side ecosystem, which changed the power landscape, right? So forks don't need to necessarily win or get more users to matter. And in this case, I think this kind of sent a message about how things could be done differently. And it also made clear that that group of people were not interested in re-entering the fold again. So another interesting kind of consequence of this is, I guess, what I would call professional open source. So what I mean by that is we have a bunch of people in this room. I would guess probably the majority of the people in the room. How many people are paid to do open source work primarily at their job? I guess if you look around the room, everyone, that is the minority, right? And I would say in the open source community in general, it is in the minority, right? So when you have people whose full-time salaried work is focused primarily on open source, and when they have bosses and leaders and HR teams and their mortgage depends on them making those people happy, then the incentives are radically different, right? And it introduces different incentives to what exists before when you have volunteers working in their free time. And also, you have the blurring between the two, where you have people taking contracts and doing paid work on open source. They might not be an employee, but they have agreed to some sort of transactional relationship in exchange for money. And that makes things hard. And this is even more tricky when you have a project like RubyGems, which is already hard because you're running critical open source infrastructure. And it requires many skills outside of writing code, right? Which is sometimes the easiest skill to be able to get from the community in open source. What this means is that volunteers have their limits and people burn out, right? So what does this mean for careers, right? So a bunch of the people involved in this story had at some point been paid either full-time or part-time or were full-time employees of Ruby Central or Ruby Together or whatever it may be. Well, my potentially contentious take is open source is not a career, right? And by that, I don't mean those of you who said it's your full-time job to work on open source. I don't mean that you somehow don't have a job and you're in a haze and don't really know where you are or what you're doing. Like, obviously, some people do have that, but most of us don't. Open source can be part of your career. And even those folks I imagine who are working full-time on open source, I would imagine your day-to-day looks pretty different to how it did if it was just your evenings and weekends, right? It's a very different way of working. And I don't think we help our community by making out that the way you worked before you received any money can just be paid a Bay Area salary without any change to it. So I think we also need to plan for our exit as individuals and as organizations and exit of funding and all these types of things, right? We need to plan for the transitions that are going to happen even when they're deeply uncomfortable. Because ultimately, one size does not fit all. Every project is going to ebb and flow and change over the years. And context is everything. So what can we learn from all this? Well, as I said at the beginning, it's not about blame, right? We need to not blame because it just simplifies and polarizes and it prevents learning. If you're 100% sure about who's right and who's wrong, then that's going to feel good maybe for you, but it's not going to explain very much. Governance in open source is really boring until it's not. And at that time, it's probably too late to introduce it. Okay? Maybe money entering the equation makes things better, but it certainly makes things a lot more complicated. And we should think really carefully about how and when and why you introduce money to the open source project. Let's all not focus on who was right and who was wrong, not who messed up, but instead just try and ask better questions. Let's ask about what broke and why it broke, and not who did what. And then we could learn something about governance or money. Right? If your project hasn't argued about governance or money yet, it probably will one day. Be prepared and try and do this stuff before it becomes a problem. And that's the transferable lesson. If you've got questions, then you can come and speak to me outside. You can email me, or you can find how to contact me other ways on my website. Thank you very much.